Okay, now, according to a recent report by the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, at least one in six South Africans suffers from anxiety. Globally, that figure is thought to be around one in 13. But for people who've never suffered with mental illness or anxiety, it can be hard to imagine what it's like living with the condition. Take a listen as this sufferer explains how it feels to live with anxiety.
I don't know when anxiety is going to hit me. I don't know when I'm going to have a panic attack. Yes, there are triggers that are there, but the majority of the time I could literally just wake up and it's like God has a spotlight on me and the world has this spotlight and everyone's watching and I have this pressure to perform. I have this to-do list. I have things that I need to get done throughout the day and that makes it worse. And it's just this pressure you feel. And, you know, at times it's debilitating for sure. Other times you have to fight through it. But you don't get any enjoyment out of the day. Living with an anxiety disorder, but if I frame it this way, living or going through the day struggling with anxiety symptoms, there's no enjoyment through that day. You're just trying to get through the day so you can finally hit the bed again and see what happens the next day.
That's somebody who lives with anxiety explaining how it feels. So tonight on Ask Dr. Josh, we're asking, is anxiety ruining your life? And if you're someone who lives with anxiety or perhaps is concerned for a friend or family member who's struggling to deal with anxiety, which can be debilitating and in some cases fatal, we'd love to hear from you tonight, either to share your experience or to put your questions to Dr. Josh. We've already had a message in. I was asking you if you could describe for somebody, imagining that you're describing someone who doesn't know what it feels like, how it feels. And B says, sometimes like you've swallowed glass and your throat is closing up. And Chloe says, it feels like I can't get enough air into my lungs. It feels like drowning. Do please keep your experiences, your stories coming into us this evening on the SMS line 31567 and on the WhatsApp 072-567-1567. Share your experiences of anxiety and perhaps some of the things that you are able to do or have found help you in dealing with it. But now let's cross to Dr. Josh. Josh, great to have you back with us. We missed you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. It's been a little nice time off, but I was chomping at the bit to get back on your show.
Speaking of chomping, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was great.
Was there an overload of food?
I was telling Jeremy, it's so interesting. I actually did an interview with the BBC, and it's interesting to listen to other people making observations about, you know, our holiday. What is it going to be like? What will you be saying? What will you be eating? Who will you be talking to? It felt actually a little awkward. It was wonderful. We ate. We did not eat too much. Spent time with family, got to see my kids, one of whom is away at college, and it was nice, but I'm back and I'm ready to go.
Good, fantastic. Well, we are delighted to have you back, and particularly to talk about this topic that I know that you've wanted to speak about for a while, and we waited on you because we wanted to cover this with you, and I've been asking people so far on the show to share their experiences. For those people who don't suffer from anxiety, it can be very difficult to explain what it feels like. And another message that we've had in says, I've been diagnosed and was on medication for over a year until I decided to try without. I don't think it ever goes away, but you learn to cope with it in a healthier way. I feel panic, like the acid in my stomach is working extra. My heart beats faster. I start clenching my teeth and my palms sweat. I prefer people not to tell me I don't need to feel this way. I know I don't need to. This is just right. How my body reacts. It's uncontrollable. Sure.
Sometimes you don't know where to start. I will say this. For anybody who says, I can't understand that, I don't know what that's like, I would say, I'm going to tell you exactly how to know how that's like. We have all had moments in our life where we felt anxious, nervous, maybe even panicked. It is a normal physiological and psychological response. It is the proverbial fight or flight. We have had moments where we feel scared, where our heart beats faster, where we're sweating, where we're our teeth are clenched, like your listener said. So we have all had that experience. Anxiety is normal. But there is a difference between having that experience in the presence of danger, in the presence of a high-pressure situation, an emergency, and then having that as a daily occurrence. And that is a big difference between anxiety, which we all experience, and an anxiety disorder, like you've played the audio for in your messages. So I want people to understand that the people who have anxiety disorders, and even we'll put panic attacks aside for a second, but the audio you just played, the caller who said my stomach juices are working, those are the same kinds of anxiety responses that we all have. The difference is they have them more frequently at times when maybe they shouldn't. It's an exaggerated response, and it becomes debilitating. That's the difference between anxiety and the anxiety disorder.
Are there different sort of facets? Are there different headings under anxiety disorder? Because some people might say, you know, I have socially, I find social situations will spike my anxiety. Whereas other people, it might be something completely different. They're okay in social situations, but just maybe work anxiety or relationship anxiety. How does one, diagnose and differentiate between the different types of anxiety disorder?
Great question, because there's several of them. So we'll talk about anxiety disorders, but now let me rattle off a couple of them or a few of them that we've also, many of us have heard of. Post-traumatic stress disorder. That's an anxiety disorder. It is not the same as a phobia, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who's deathly afraid of heights. That's an anxiety disorder. Social phobia or social anxiety, like you were saying, that's another one. Agoraphobia or let's not put it, which is sort of the fear of kind of leaving the house, but it's associated with the panic attacks. Yep. And so that's really important. When someone says, I have an anxiety disorder, that does not mean, by definition, everyone's having panic attacks. It also does not mean, by definition, they're all afraid of heights, or they're all afraid of social situations, or they're triggered by a previous traumatic experience. So anxiety disorders, it's akin to saying, if you will, I have a virus.
Right, yeah.
I have a virus, or I have an illness, or I have a respiratory infection. Well, what kind? So there's varying kinds and varying experiences, and depending on the type that you have, you're affected very differently.
Does the type of anxiety disorder that one might be dealing with, does the treatment vary, or is there a sort of baseline that all anxiety disorders respond to, whether that be meds, whether that be sort of cognitive behavioral therapy? Do they work on the same way, or does each need to be dealt with individually and specifically?
I would say that there is kind of a base foundation of what we're trying to do when we're trying to treat an anxiety disorder. What we're trying to do really, and this is way oversimplifying it, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the body physiologically, the emotions and the thoughts to react in a way that is more consistent with what the reality is. So what I mean by that is, if you think about what you heard and when you played the audio, when people talk about, you know, I see a snake and I start breaking out in cold sweats and I'm panicked, or I get in a social situation and I'm extremely uncomfortable and I'm nervous and I'm anxious and I just want to leave, or I hear a car backfire and I hit the deck for fear of my life. You think about it, what's happening is our body and our mind is responding in a way that's exaggerated to the circumstance. And so what we do through cognitive therapy, and in many cases medication, is we're trying to attenuate the response. We're not trying to dope people up and give them so much medication that they don't feel anything, but it's really teaching the body to not have such an exaggerated response to something that is, that there, if you will, is no need for. That being said, let me say this, as one of your listeners said, the worst thing that you can do is tell somebody with an anxiety disorder, oh, there's no reason for you to feel this way.
Yeah.
Because guess what? They know. They know. That's the problem. It's an irrational belief. They know they don't feel this way. However, some people, particularly with social anxiety, Sarah Jane, some people have felt this way for so long that they actually don't know. Mm. They believe it's normal. They adapt. Their baseline level of functioning in the world is at a level of anxiety that's far greater than any of us experience. They believe that the anxious state is the normal state.
Sure. It's funny that we're talking about this because I went to go and see my my psychiatrist today, and she always, you know, she sort of goes through her regular questions of, are you sleeping all right? Are you eating all right? Blah, blah, blah. And she said to me, and how's the anxiety? But what's so key for me is that that's the question. She wants to know, how is the anxiety? Not why is the anxiety? Because very often I don't know the why. I don't know why I'm feeling anxious. I just am. But it's a testament, I think, to her professionalism and her knowledge that she knows that there's very little point, really, unless I'm volunteering this information and can pinpoint a certain thing as to that's why I'm feeling it. And there's a difference between the, for me, when I find it very difficult to explain anxiety, and our listeners are doing a much better job than I am, but there's a difference between, oh, I've got a job interview tomorrow and I'm feeling anxious and I'm driving home from work and my heart, you know, the heart palpitations, I'm very on edge. It feels like I'm sort of running on adrenaline. I get into bed at night. My heart's still going. I can't get to sleep. And a general sense of dis-ease. That's very different.
Well, and yet it's, I apologize. I forgot one other, what we typically call generalized anxiety disorder or free-floating anxiety, which is what you've just described. On the one hand, it's very different, but what I hope your listeners will hear is you think about how you feel the night before or the moment before a big interview. Your heart's pounding, it's hard time concentrating, your mouth is dry, you feel a sort of a little bit of doom or it may go wrong. And in that case, it's not pleasant. It is dis-ease. It is distress. But you can attribute it to, it's the job interview.
Absolutely.
And when the job interview is over, it's over. You experience the same thing, Sarah Jane, but it's not episodic, if you will, and it's not around one thing, and it may not be contingent on a situation. Mm. And as a result, that's very debilitating.
So I guess, and you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, basically what we're saying is that the emotion of and the feeling of anxiety is essentially a very base one necessary for us as humans. It's what's it's what makes us run away from a bear, I guess. But
yes.
Sometimes that anxiety will place itself in inappropriate situations or manifest itself inappropriately when, am I on the right track?
You are. That was beautiful. That was far better put than I could have ever put. You basically told, this is a survival mechanism. If we had no anxiety response, we would have no danger response.
Right.
If we had nothing that told us something might not be right, think about how easy it would be for us to just be killed.
Yeah, we'd just be eaten by bears all over the place.
That's exactly. So, and to your point, anxiety, stress, distress, the fight or flight, the physiological reaction, the sympathetic nervous system, the heart rate and the dry mouth and all of that is what protects us from danger. The problem is when there is no danger or there is no need for it and our body responds that way anyway, it becomes debilitating. And what we have to do either medically or pharmacologically and or through the way we think, the way we control our own physiology with our breathing, the way we interact with other people, what we have to do is we have to change that loop in our brain that says, this is dangerous, to this is something that may not be something I like, but it is not a threat to me. And it is not as simple, if you've never had an anxiety disorder, it is not as simple as saying, just don't think that way.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, for sure. If you are just joining us, the time is 11:31, and we welcome Dr. Josh Claypole back to the show for our regular Wednesday night Ask Dr. Josh slot. And tonight we are asking, is anxiety ruining your life? Now, we know that at least one in six South Africans suffer from anxiety. But do we know enough about it? Are we sharing enough about it? And I think, I guess that a lot of the problem is that with any kind of mental illness, there is the shame, and we speak about that sort of on a week-by-week basis. But also, if it's difficult to pinpoint what the root of the anxiety, it can be, I guess, very difficult to explain and very difficult, therefore, for people to understand. But I am asking you, if you are somebody who lives with anxiety or an anxiety disorder, to try and explain tonight what it feels like. And my goodness, have you taken up the baton. Steph's messaged in and says that, hi, SJ, constant anxiety is a knot in your stomach all the time. Miko says it can be so hard to function, to think, to speak. It may seem like I'm a dysfunctional person at times, which in some ways I am, but not because I am a dysfunctional person, but because anxiety can be so intense on the body and mind that functioning is not possible. It feels like my nervous system is stuck in fight or flight. I can't relax. My nerves get so on edge that it's hard to relax, and being around people makes it worse. Having to explain why I'm dysfunctional makes it worse. I have so much shame around it. This is exactly what we've just been speaking to, and want reassurance that I'm not a bad person for having these feelings, and for how they affect my ability to show up in life. Sure. Thanks, Miko. That is powerful stuff. I love what you said there about affecting my ability to show up to life. Sure.
Yes. So one of the differences between something like anxiety and depression causes us to sort of withdraw. It slows us down, if you will. And it's very debilitating in its own way. One of the problems with anxiety is because it's a danger signal, we, in order to adapt or to try to adapt and to cope, we start avoiding things, right? And this is what you hear a lot of psychologists will say. Anxiety is very sticky. It has this way of connecting the dots to everything in your life. So I don't like, for example, it may be I don't like going to noisy dance clubs. So I avoid those. And then I realize I don't like going to noisy dance parties or to parties. So I start avoiding those. I don't like crowds of more than about four or five, so I avoid those. I don't like interacting with anybody more than one person. What happens is the anxiety starts generalizing, and it starts sticking itself to, I don't like when we have to plan for social situations. What happens is the anxiety starts anticipating on its own what might happen. And so what you hear the term anticipatory anxiety. So now, this sounds a little convoluted, but now what you get is anxiety around the possibility of anxiety.
I relate to that. Yep.
That's it. What if I go there and I have a panic attack? What if I go there and I'm uncomfortable? What if I go there and I can't sleep? What if I go there and there's a crowd? And so that alone triggers anxiety. Then you sit and you're trying to function in your day-to-day life, and someone's asking you, Sarah Jane, I need you to do this interview, and I need you. Well, that creates anxiety because your brain's already working on something else. You can get to the point where you absolutely shut down.
Tell me, I'm not somebody that's ever experienced a panic attack. I've certainly had very heightened concentrated periods of very high anxiety. But the way that friends of mine who do suffer with panic attacks have described it, I don't think that's something I've ever experienced, because what they've described has sounded, and they've said this to me, has sounded like they thought they've been having a heart attack. What is happening?
It's misdiagnosed both ways. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, what is happening physiologically or physically within the body at that moment? Because there will be some people who sort of poo-poo the idea of any sort of mental health issue at all and say, well, you know, it's all psychosomatic and there's no such thing and nothing's happening. But if you are feeling that you are having a heart attack, it feels like your heart is exploding, something must be happening to you physically in that moment.
Oh, yeah. Adrenaline surge, you're having a surge of adrenaline, your sympathetic nervous system is jacked up, you've got cortisol released into your system, your heart rate is up. Like, we can debate about whether there's a mental health issue or not. If I put a heart rate monitor on you, your heart is beating faster.
Yeah.
You are sweating. You know, so this is the thing about anxiety. We can debate all day long, you know, whether we poo-poo mental health or not. But I'm telling you that during an anxiety experience, particularly during a panic attack, your physiology is fundamentally different. And this is a problem because it does very often, people will feel tightness in their chest, all of those things. And so very often they will go to the hospital. They think they're having a heart attack. And, you know, the proper tests are run. And sometimes it is your heart is fine. You've had this surge of sympathetic nervous system activity. And the thing that's unique about panic attacks is they do tend, unlike a phobia or PTSD, they tend to come out of nowhere. People will talk about, I was walking around and all of a sudden I felt this closing in, this impending doom, you hear this all the time, panic, felt like I was going to die. And why it happens, you know, we don't know that there's some genetic predispositions, there's some past sort of environmental predispositions, but panic attacks are unique like that in that they tend not to build slowly, but they tend to hit like a ton of bricks. That's why we tend to use medication around panic attacks, but what panic attacks can lead to is the term that I used earlier called agoraphobia, which is this idea of, these are the people who don't want to leave their house, but it's really the idea of, I don't want to get to a place where I might have a panic attack.
Mm.
It's a fear of being out in public and having and not having control or having a panic attack.
Is agoraphobia different to a social anxiety disorder? So is, because the way that you've described
yes.
it is not something I've thought. My understanding was that agoraphobia was, I don't want to be out among the people. But you're saying that actually the agoraphobia is the fear of having your anxiety disorder, having a panic attack outside, whereas social anxiety disorder is the fear of being around the people.
Yeah, happens is they kind of bleed into each other.
Right.
So if you think about it, the way agoraphobia typically starts is I'm out in public, I had this terrible experience, this panic attack, and it scared me to death. So I stopped going to the grocery store where I had the panic attack. Mm. I don't want to go there anymore. Then I had a panic attack a little closer to home at the neighborhood drugstore. So I stopped going there. And what ends up happening is the anticipatory anxiety starts generalizing. People basically end up not feeling safe in any other place but their small surroundings around their home. The parallel is, and the difference is, it's not that I don't want to be amongst people and people make me feel uncomfortable, i.e. social anxiety.
Mm.
It's, I don't want to have a panic attack. Most people with social anxiety who don't have never had panic attacks, they won't tell you, I'm afraid I'm going to have a panic attack. It's that being out in public makes me nervous and anxious.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. The time is 20 minutes to midnight. We're talking to Dr. Josh this evening about anxiety and anxiety disorders. And you're all messaging in. I've been asking you to explain. If you are having to explain to somebody what it feels like living with anxiety, with an anxiety disorder, having a panic attack, then please do share your stories with us. 021-446-0567. No need to give your real name if you don't want to. The SMS line is 31567. And you can also WhatsApp 072-567-1567. Walden, I'll get to your question in just a minute. I just want to take a message here from Marie that says, I really wish people knew what it takes to live like this, that me functioning on a normal level, which I manage to do half of the time, takes heroic super strength, that me being in a relationship and choosing to love is the bravest, scariest thing ever, and I do it anyways, and that living with anxiety is courageous. Chantal says, learning to accept that my body's fight or flight reflexes are constantly humming away in the background like a car left idling, ready to rev up at the slightest, has been hugely helpful, a hugely helpful reframe for me. It captures the exhaustion and risk of long-term damage. I also feel that I must be at the wheel constantly and committed, and use committed self-control to manage the inputs that I subject myself to, knowing how my pathways are set up. This is just incredible insight, and thanks so much everyone for sharing. Walden is asking on the WhatsApp line, why do some folk panic when entering a large retail store as soon as they enter, and see lots of people, so much so that they have to take calming tablets before they leave?
Yeah, so for a number of reasons. The previous message that you had describing the sort of physiological response was just beautifully written. Because it is, when I talk with patients and clients about sort of anxiety and how physiological it is, I talk about dialing it up and dialing it down, and that we all have it. That it's our sympathetic nervous system. It's in all of us. The problem is, for some people, and see if this makes sense, some people, if you think about it from a 0 to 10 scale, some people can go from 0 to 8 very quickly. Mm. Some people are running at a 6 or 7 all the time. Some people can be at a 6 or 7 and then go to a 10. And so we talk about going into a mall or going into a shopping center, stimulation, people, noises, lights, all those kinds of things, even if it's friendly. It's not a aggressive set sight, but it's stimulation. It stimulates our nervous system. We become more alert. There are people moving around. There are lights. There are noises. We're attending to things. Well, individuals with anxiety, much like the person who messaged in, they may be already running high to begin with. And so if they're already running on a 0 to 10 scale at a 5 or a 6, put them in a highly stimulating place, and now they're at a 7 or 8, whereas the rest of us might go from, you know, no anxiety at all. We walk into a mall and we become alert.
Mm-hmm.
That alert is a level of physiological, if you will, anxiety. Sports is another example. In sports, when we're up for a game, when we're getting ready to go into the game, that's anxiety. People say, I don't feel it. I feel pumped. I feel ready.
Mm.
Well, pumped and ready is essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
So if you have an anxiety disorder coming into a mall, there's too many things to attend to. And yeah, for some people, not everyone, for some people, they need to tone their nervous system down. Sometimes they do that with medicine. Sometimes we teach people how to regulate their breathing and their physiological response naturally, so they may not have to use medicine.
I want to talk a little bit more about treatment and medicine in just a second, but I do want to go to some more of the messages that have come in. Penny says, gosh, what a huge subject. It's like a constant running person in my head, frantically trying to get out. It can hit me in a moment from nowhere. Then I can't go down an escalator or get in a lift because I literally think I'm going to die. It's a fear of existing and a terror of being completely annihilated if I say the wrong thing. And it plays one sentence round and round in my head. It's that horrific feeling of my veins pumping so hard and nothing will make it better. Janine says, heart palpitations, shortness of breath, forgetfulness, tearful, overwhelmed, tired, insomnia, irritable, no energy, and numb feeling and emotion. It seems like we've really struck a chord, which is,
yeah.
We know that people are living with anxiety in this way, and I'm so glad, and thank you all for sharing with us. Crystal says that, I was diagnosed at 14 and I'm now 45. I've been medicated for over 30 years. Anxiety is watching everyone else come up for air while we're all in a pool and I can't come up to breathe. Panic, fear, it's my default emotion. I fall asleep like that and I wake up like that. It never goes away. Sure.
I don't know how many of your listeners who are writing in have been treated, or, you know, some are, but all of those things for so many people can be managed. mean, anxiety is one of those things that is as debilitating as, and you've heard me say this, I talk about this with depression, as debilitating as it is, and it is one of the conditions where we do a really good job in helping people manage it. When I say manage it meaning either dial down the symptoms so much so that they're not a problem all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, making it go away. And in some cases, giving them the tools so that if they're in situations where it's bad, it's not as bad. We can treat anxiety very effectively, and we have been able to do so for a long time, non-pharmacologically, and now as the medicines are getting better, pharmacologically. But with anxiety in particular, it is always a combination of behavioral or cognitive behavioral plus medication. One or the other, particularly medication alone, tends not to do the trick because people have to learn how to manage their behaviors and their interactions as well, and that's not always done with just medicine.
Yeah, for sure. So if we're talking about pharmacologically, what are the sort of go-to or the standard treatments that doctors are likely to prescribe? And has that changed over the years?
Yeah, it has. I mean, one of the things that we have found is, and I think I may have mentioned this on your show, the kind of co-occurrence or the mingling of anxiety and depression is so close that a lot of times we'll talk about people who are depressed present as irritable or even anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, one of the things we have found is certain of the antidepressant medications, some of the selective serotonin inhibitors, some of the other ones that tend to deal more with the irritability parts of depression tend to work well for anxiety, for generalized anxiety. They tone down the kind of obsessive thinking that we see in depression, but we also see in anxiety disorders. So some of the antidepressants, they're called antidepressants, but they are often used for anxiety disorders as well. The other place which people are more, you know, sort of used to are some of the benzodiazepines and the ones that can be addictive that calm the nervous system.
Yeah.
You know, and many people, legally or illegally, you put enough Xanax in your body and you will feel absolutely no anxiety, none.
Yeah.
Now, you will not be conscious, but you will not feel any anxiety. However,
the stories I can tell you about me and Xanax.
Well, that's why,
back in the day, not post sobriety, obviously.
Okay. Well, now, so things like that, things like Klonopin, beta blockers, and so one of the things that people have found pharmacologically, which is very different, is it used to be take a pill because you're feeling anxious.
Yeah.
Right. I feel anxious, so I take a pill. But one of the things that's changed is we've started using the medication to, if you will, downregulate the system. So taking a tiny amount of the pill daily, or sometimes in the morning and in the night, not because you feel anxious in the moment, much like depression, the way we take depression medication. We don't take antidepressants because we feel particularly bad. We put one in our mouth and we feel better.
Mm-hmm.
We let it build up in the bloodstream. And what we found is that certain medications can kind of, if you will, dial down our nervous system in people who have jacked up nervous systems without sedating them.
Yeah.
And it just tones it down a little bit. It's that coupled with learning, you've heard every one of these messages in, coupled with learning how to reframe your thinking and how to control your own physiology. We have such power over our physiology that we need to learn how to manage. This is learning how to regulate your breathing when you're not breathing slowly and deeply, how to regulate your heart rate and blood pressure. Yes, this is the proverbial meditation, stress management, diaphragmatic breathing. As much as people hate to hear that from a psychologist, damn it, it works.
Mm,
it can absolutely work. And so the combination of those two can dramatically help people with anxiety.
It's funny that you mentioned benzos there, because I remember as a very, very little girl, my grandmother, who was a sort of a certain generation. I mean, she raised, or gave birth to two children sort of in the middle of the Second World War. So just to paint a picture of generationally where she was at. And she used to, if she started feeling a little bit tizzy, as she would call it, she'd pop a Valium. Yeah. I mean, no problem. And I hear that so often from friends of mine whose grandparents or parents were of that generation,
yeah.
of that Valium generation. And actually what's happened, and I realise this now, is that you've got an entire generation of sort of 70, 80-year-olds who are addicted to Valium, who haven't functioned without Valium for 40, 50 years.
They didn't know better. I'm having nerves.
Yeah, exactly, nerves.
Anxiety disorder.
Yeah, for sure.
Think about generationally, you're home, you have kids, you're managing it all the same, you're feeling a little on edge, we've got a medication that'll take the edge off,
mm-hmm.
right? And now we do the same thing for right or wrong. This is the classic Prozac Nation,
yeah.
right? Oh, you're a little overwhelmed, you're feeling a little anxious, you're feeling a little sick. And this is why medications like this, not so much the Valium, but like Prozac, they get a bad rap because people say, oh my God, we're going to take medication for every little problem. No. You shouldn't be taking medication for every little problem. But the way your listeners describe their experiences, what I would challenge people is, if they think this is just about, bucking up and being tougher, listen to those experiences and imagine having those on a daily basis. Even though you know and you're trying to buck up, that is when your nervous system is out of whack, and the right medication coupled with the right therapy is a way to manage. We give it to you to get your insulin back in check. We give it to you to get your blood pressure back in check. Mm-hmm. We give it to you to get your sinuses flowing the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a problem with that. And that's why I think it's very important for people to understand. This is not about giving people medication for every little worry in the world.
Mm-hmm.
No, you should not do that. But when it becomes debilitating, medication coupled with therapy can be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. A message in on the WhatsApp. Hi, SJ. I'm the most confident person you will ever meet. Love interacting with people and an extrovert. The first time I experienced an attack, I thought I was having a stroke. Scary, and ended up in casualty or the ER. They were not able to diagnose me. Years later, I had another one. This time, heart palpitations and almost forgetting to breathe. It's like an out-of-body experience. You can't relate to anything. You can't think of where you are or what you're doing. It's so frightening. My doctor has discussed it with me and explained what he can and equipped me with emergency meds for in case. Just knowing I have the tabs in my bag is like a safety net. Since I've had them, I've never taken one. Not because I haven't had more attacks, but probably because taking tabs and meds actually makes me anxious, as I hate medication. It's just a catch-22 situation. Awful. You think you are dying. The palpitations for no reason are the worst. I am not a timid person and I have no idea what triggers me, says Lynn. Lynn, thank you, my darling. Thanks so much for that message. And that idea of having the meds, but often people do have a fear of medication.
Oh, well, yeah, they have a fear of addiction. They have a fear. So am I going to get addicted? The other is, is it going to
make me a zombie?
And make me a zombie. And, look, let's be honest. As we're helping people who are taking medication, and this, you've said it from personal experience, you got to get the medications right. You think about it. Look, the best way I can explain to people is when you take cold medication, sometimes this cold medication is too strong for you and you've got dry mouth and you're dizzy and you feel sedated and you say, okay, well, I'm not going to be on that. I got to take a little bit less, or I got to take a different kind. So some of it with any medication is trial and error to dial it to the right sort of level. One of the challenges you have with anxiety and the sympathetic nervous system is that as you're feeling anxious, your sympathetic nervous system is, if you will, it's overriding the effects of the medication. And so we're trying to find what is that balance that gets it right so that your system will react normally.
Mm.
You couple that with, and I'll just throw a couple in there, not for deep discussion, but people need to know about this. Individuals who have mitral valve prolapse, individuals who have sometimes arrhythmias or irregular heartbeats, individuals who have those two things also sometimes experience something called dysautonomia. Those things tend to run hand in hand with generalized anxiety. And so one of the things we know is that it's all very intertwined, and what you want to prevent is people fearing life because they fear that they might feel anxious. That's the behavioral part that gets very dangerous, because you keep sheltering back and back and back until you have no life.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Oh, this has been such an important conversation, and thank you everyone who's messaged in. We haven't actually had time to get to all of your messages, but thank you for sharing with us so candidly and so honestly. I just want to end off on one message here from Michael, who says, "What I really want my friends to know is that I did not choose this, and I can't just stop it either."
Nothing more said. Nothing more to say other than there are so many resources. It is not a rare experience for your listeners. You've heard them living with it. People can be treated for it. And so please, if you're feeling debilitated by anxiety and you've never sought treatment, don't try to just buck up on your own, because you don't need to, whether it's pharmacological or not. There are effective treatments.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, just a reminder that you can get help and support, even if it's just the first port of call and you are redirected appropriately at the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. Their website is www.sadac.org. Josh, always great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for a really great discussion tonight.
Thank you, Sarah Jane.